She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. This show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies, true business leaders in sustainability, and we thank them for their ongoing support and for what they do for this community and the planet. So I'm going to take a deep breath here, and it's one of those times when I'm so happy and proud that this is the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. It's my show, it's our team, and I get to use this time in the way that I think is best. So I'm going to go on a little bit about our guest today. I promised him that I would do my best to embarrass him. He promised me he'd nap during that time. So let me just do a little bit of a somewhat long introduction that comes very much from my heart, because I have been watching this man for quite some time, and he's left quite a footprint in my life and upset my life very much in all the right ways. His name is Howard Lyman, and he is a passionate champion of individual health, the welfare of all animals, and the sustainability of the planet. His life is dedicated to educating people about how issues are linked and about how eating the right food, whole plant-based food, can have a critical positive effect in all of those areas. A fourth-generation Montana cattle rancher turned vegan, Lyman is a world-renowned public speaker, author, and animal advocate. He understands that we must ask ourselves as a culture whether we want to embrace the change that must come or resist it. And as he says, we must ask ourselves the fundamental question: are we so attached to the dietary fallacies with which we were raised, so afraid to counter the arbitrary laws of eating taught to us in childhood by our misinformed parents, that we cannot alter the course they set us on, even if it leads to our own ruin? Making responsible food choices, he says, makes him feel a part of a movement that is not so much political as it is the march of the human heart. Author of Mad Cowboy, Plain Truth from a Cattle Rancher Who Won't Eat Meat and No More Bull, the Mad Cowboy targets America's worst enemy, our diet. Howard Lyman is the subject of the documentary films Mad Cowboy and Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. He is also founder of A Voice for a Viable Future, an educational nonprofit organization that promotes organic family farming and biodiversity. And Howard Lyman, I'm going to tell you that I didn't give that long of an introduction to Jane Goodall.
Is it time for me to wake up now?
It's time for you to wake up. I'm going to ring the bell. Ding, 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 ding.
I'm here.
It's good. Thank goodness. So you can wake up now. And I, you know, when I read that in preparing for the show, I thought, you know what? That's how I really want to set the stage. And it really is all about you. So tell us, give a little bit of the brief history, how you came from a fourth-generation Montana cattle rancher to being one of the most recognized advocates for a plant-based diet on the planet.
Well, I started out, I was raised during the Second World War on the largest dairy farm in the state of Montana. My parents couldn't hire any help, and so both my mother and father were milking the cows. Meant my sisters and brother and I were raised by my grandparents. Well, back then, daycare was considerably different than it is today.
Especially on a Montana cattle ranch, I bet.
Yeah, well, daycare was working in the garden. And, you know, I love that. Putting my hands in real, live, living soil, the only thing I ever wanted to do when I was growing up was be a farmer. And my parents owned a farm. 12 years I'd go to school. I didn't have to do anything but party and play football because I knew I was going to be a farmer.
Right.
You know, I graduated from high school. I think they graduated me because they were afraid, If they didn't, I'd probably come back. Went home to that farm and found that that farm was a business to be run. I didn't have the tools to run a business. So I immediately went to Montana State University. I majored in agriculture. I learned about herbicides, pesticides, hormones, medication. And I went home and I was going to turn that small family farm into an agribusiness. I just had all the tools. I was going to be an agribusinessman. Now, I couldn't spell that, but I knew that's what I wanted.
And it was big. It was big.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I went home and I turned that farm into an operation where I had 7,000 head of cattle, 12,000 acres of crop. I had 30 employees. I can't tell you what a thrill it was the first time I wrote a check for $1 million and it didn't bounce. And I thought, man, I have arrived. I'm the Donald Trump of agriculture.
That's a big day.
Oh, yeah. You know, here I am. I'm on top of the world. And all of a sudden, it comes crashing down. I end up paralyzed from the waist down. I go see the doctor. The doctor tells me, he said, you have a tumor on your spinal cord. Now, if that tumor's on the inside of the spinal cord, you have less than one chance in a million you will ever walk again. Well, here I am. A lot of things are going through my mind. Number one, the reason I became a farmer was real, live, living soil.
Right.
And when I'm in charge of the farm, using the chemicals, I see the soil change. I see the birds die. I see the trees die. I am never willing to admit that I'm that problem until I'm paralyzed. So I'm thinking, here I am. One chance in a million? Yeah, I'll be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. What kind of an invalid am I going to be? Am I going to sit in a wheelchair and feel sorry for myself? Or can I actually make my life amount to something?
Right.
And if that was something, what would I do? You know? So that night before the operation, I fully believed that I would never walk again. And I made the commitment to myself. Never again will I lie to myself. Never again will I see a problem and be afraid to admit that I'm the one that's responsible for it. Never again in my life will I do something I do not feel comfortable in doing. They operate on me.
Okay, go ahead.
12
I'm
hours.
Sorry. Go ahead. 12 hours. Sorry.
12 hours. They take a tumor out of the inside of my spinal cord. I wake up after that operation, and the first thing I remember is the nurse saying to me, Mr. Lyman, you have to move up in the bed. I can remember as clear as a bell today what I said to her. I said, there will never be a day like that because I can feel the foot of the bed.
Wow.
I couldn't feel it going in, but after the operation, I didn't know whether I'd walk. But I had feeling. I could feel the foot of the bed. Well, I walked out of the hospital with a one in a million operation. But, you know, it's tough after you're involved in this agribusiness thing, you know, and I decide, what am I going to do to change? And I thought, I got it. I'm going to become an organic farmer. And to become an organic farmer, I'm going to need to borrow some money from my banker.
Right.
So I go see my banker and I say to him, I need to borrow some money. He said, no problem. What are you going to do with it? I said, I want to become an organic farmer. He looked at me and he laughed and he said, you want me to lend you money? And you're not going to spend it with my other customers, the chemical dealer, the pharmaceutical dealer, the fertilizer dealer? He said, there will never be a day like that. So I ended up, I sold my farm, I paid my debts, but I never gave up on the commitment that I made when I never knew whether I would walk again. Never again in my life would I do something I thought was wrong. And I thought what I was doing on that farm was wrong, and so I started working with other farmers to make sure they didn't make the mistakes that I did. And that's the path that got me started going to where I am today. Fourth generation farmer, rancher, feedlot operator. Don't eat meat. 25 years, I have not had a bite of animal product knowingly. 25 years.
And it was cold turkey, Howard? Like cold turkey? Oh, it's like, I'm done?
No. You know, I started out, and I think the important thing is that you need to have some information on where you're going.
Right.
I stepped on the scale. That's well over 350 pounds. You know, I played football at 300 pounds, but here I am. I weigh 350 pounds. My blood pressure is sky high. My cholesterol is over 300. I thought, wow, you know.
Jeez.
I keep this up. I'm not going to live very long.
You're not going to be making much of a difference.
No, I thought, well, you know what I'll do is I'll become a closet vegetarian. Here I am. I'm working in Washington, D.C. as an advocate for a family farm organization. And I'm thinking about becoming a vegetarian. But I didn't want to tell anybody about that. And so I became a closet vegetarian, and I lost some weight. My blood pressure went down. My cholesterol went down. And I thought, wow, if I can do that being a vegetarian.
A closet vegetarian.
Yeah. Just think what I could do if I became a vegan. I lost 150 pounds.
Oh, my God.
My blood pressure went from sky high to normal. My cholesterol from 300 to 135. I'll tell you what. I became so enamored with my results that I couldn't help but tell everybody about it. And
You had to come out of the closet.
Yeah, I'm out of the closet. And so I thought I probably should leave Capitol Hill. I should probably go out and talk to the real world because, you know, the thing about government, it's a big charade. They just want people to believe something can be done, and the real changes all happen at the grassroots. And so I went out, started talking at the grassroots, and that was a long time ago, but it was the best decision I ever made.
And the part of it I want to ask you about, when you said, you know, you got the word that you had a tumor and a one in a million chance, which blows everybody away, I'm sure, every time you say it. Nobody wants those odds ever, especially with the C word. What point were you at in really knowing that part of what the cause was, is if in fact you do believe that, was environmental and what you had been surrounded with in terms of toxic chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, antibiotics. I mean, I remember the first time I think I watched one of your movies, you said, you know, I loved my cattle and we would, you know, bring them into the cattle yard and we'd, you know, give them a greeting and then we'd shoot them with how many antibiotics? Did you say like 24 or 7 or 27?
Oh, yeah.
Some ridiculous number?
We just loaded them up. You know, that was what was recommended. You know, I remember I was sitting in Washington, D.C. at my desk, and across my desk was probably one of the world's renowned researchers alive, Dr. T. Colin Campbell.
Right.
And we're sitting there talking, and he says to me, he said, did you ever have anybody in your family have cancer? And I said, yeah. My brother, he died of Hodgkin's disease. And he said, you know, did you use chemicals on the farm? I said, oh, yeah, we used 2,4-D, 2,4-5-D. You named it. We used it. He said, well, you know, we found that the 2,4-5-T ended up with a compound in it that was known as dioxin. And he said, you see, I have to hold my cheek right now because when I was researching this, I didn't know how difficult a chemical it was, and it killed all the muscles in my face. We used 2,4-5-T in Vietnam. We called it Agent Orange. we used it on the farm like it was soda pop. You know, no gloves, no goggles, nothing. My brother, he died of Hodgkin's disease. I end up with a tumor on my spinal cord. And I'm not a Rhodes Scholar, but I can tell you right now, I know that our use of those chemicals on that farm without any protective clothing had to be responsible for our health problems.
Yeah, and for your brother's death. Now, what about, Howard, when your parents ran the farm, was it a chemical farm then, too? I mean, I don't know what else to call it. Did they use a lot of the you know, insecticides, pesticides, antibiotics? Did you have to, even back then?
No. You know, when I was raised and when my parents were operating the farm, we didn't use any chemicals.
Wow. Wow.
Zero. We were an organic farm. And, you know, like I'm telling you, the soil was different. We had trees. We had birds. The whole environment, I saw them both. I saw the ones the way it was when I was growing up, when it was organic, and I saw what it was like after I used all of the chemicals. And, you know, I don't talk to my audiences about something I heard.
Right.
I talk to them about things I actually lived through. And if you don't think it isn't difficult to come from Montana, a fourth generation cattleman, and make the change to become a vegan, my hometown newspaper, on the front page, you know what they called me?
I can't imagine. Turncoat.
Turncoat. Because I was not doing what everybody else was doing. And there's a lot of pressure on society to make sure that you do the same as everybody else.
And living with them, they're feeling, okay, he's attacking us. You're taking this high road stand and basically outing everybody with the truth. And did you, I know the answer, but you lost dear friends over it.
Oh, yeah. You know, really surprising that I went to my 50th class reunion in my hometown, Great Falls, Montana. I walk in. You never saw so many canes, crutches, and walkers all of your life. One-third of my graduating class has already died. Nobody wanted to come up and talk to me about my diet. I'm the only vegan in the 1956 high school class of Great Falls, Montana. And I walk into the bathroom and some clown comes up to me and said, "You ever sneak out and get a burger?"
Oh my God. Did you want to pop him?
No, I just basically told him, I said, "You know, there is a real drawback to my diet. You have to attend a lot more funerals than guys that eat like you."
And I can hear you saying that. I'm not kidding. It's like, it just, and the thing about me is that I told you this the night that you came to Tucson and spoke, is I am a work in progress, 80% better. But Howard, there are times when I go past In-N-Out Burger and it's calling me. And I have literally driven in and out of the line saying, "You can do this, you can do this, you can do this," because it's just, it goes deep.
I know that.
It does. It really goes deep.
You know, I smoked for 15 years. I ended up marrying a widow that had three little children, and here I was smoking, and the kids came up to me and said, "Are you going to die like our daddy did?"
Oh.
I quit smoking. And I'm telling you, I went through the worst withdrawal you can ever imagine. And when I quit eating meat, I thought, it's going to be just like that. I quit eating meat. It was like falling off a log. No problem.
I love
giving
it.
Getting off of cheese, just like quitting smoking.
We're going to talk about that. We are going to talk about that. We are already up at the first break, and I promise you that when we come back, I will not read that very long introduction, but I will reintroduce you to our guests. And when we do come back, I want to talk about some of the bold statements that you have made, bold but true, underlined, .. about you know, how cattle ranchers have been turned into cannibals, some shocking things about that. And do we have to shoot cattle full of antibiotics? And how much of the many horrible things that happen are really simply bottom line driven for profit without regard to people and our planet? Everybody stay here with me, Howard Lyman, the Mad Cowboy, and I'm sure you're loving it as much as I am. We'll be right back. Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
For almost 40 years, Bookman's Entertainment Exchange has been the place for used books, music, movies, and video games in Arizona. From the latest bestsellers to out-of-print classics, we have you covered with 3 Tucson locations. And now you can buy, sell, and trade musical instruments. Our newly expanded sections are chock-full of top-notch instruments. From beginners to seasoned musicians, we've got something for you. Open 7 days a week, shop, hang out, and enjoy our free Wi-Fi. Bookman's, good for your pocket, good for the planet.
Ready to clean out that garage? Goodwill offers you 40 convenient locations all over southern Arizona. And at every one, you'll be greeted by a uniformed Goodwill employee trained to assist you in unloading your items, prepared to offer you a receipt for your tax-deductible donation, and grateful for something you won't get anywhere else.
Thank you. Because of your donation, I have a job.
The gift of Goodwill. For a list of Goodwill donation sites, go to goodwillsouthernaz.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And our guest today is certainly giving us some wonderful opportunities to think about our life, our health, and the health of the planet. His name is Howard Lyman. He is the author of the book Mad Cowboy. He is a much sought-after and world-renowned public speaker and truly a force to be reckoned with. Mr. Lyman is a fourth-generation cattle rancher who investigated the use of chemicals in agriculture after developing a spinal tumor that nearly paralyzed him. Now a vegetarian, Howard and his wife Willow Jean have made it their life's work to blast through the propaganda of beef and dairy industries and the government that protects them to expose an animal-based diet as the primary cause of cancer, heart disease, obesity, and obesity in this country, and. You know, I say to people, I'm an expert on interviewing people, which makes me not an expert on any of these things. And Howard, I could not agree with you more. Everything that's going on pretty much with our health goes back to what it is we're eating. So thanks again for taking the time to be with us and telling your story so well again. Okay, let's go with this statement. What do you mean cattle ranchers turned cows into cannibals? That's pretty bold, and I get it, but we really need to talk about it.
Well, you know, we ended up with a problem in England, and it was called mad cow disease.
Right.
And you know, when I was working on the farm and in my feedlot, we ended up mixing a ration to feed the animals that included things like meat meal. I never gave much thought about it. It was legal. The government encouraged it. And what we were doing, when you would slaughter an animal, about 50% of the slaughter of an animal by weight is not saleable to humans' consumption. And so what in the world do you do with all of that? Well, they take it, they grind it up, they cook it, turn it into something that looks like, powdered sugar, and it's high in protein, and they take it and put it into the cattle rations. It's very cheap protein. You need a lot of protein if you're going to fatten animals. I never gave any thought to that until I heard about mad cow disease in England. They were doing the same thing, And I thought, well, wait a minute. When you take an animal, it has no part of its physiology that guards against itself. And so if you have a cow is an herbivore, should not be eating another cow. And so there's nothing in the physiology of that animal to keep it from accepting the diseases that they might get from eating another cow. And what were we doing? We were taking a cow that was an absolute herbivore, and not only turning it into a carnivore, we were turning it into a cannibal, and we were ending up with a significant health problems, not for the cows, but for the humans. We were transferring a disease, a spongiform disease that eats the holes in the brain of humans. We were transferring it from an infected cow to the meat we were eating, and then to the humans that were eating it. And so I started traveling around and talking to people and saying, look, we should not take a true herbivore and turn it into a cannibal. And I hate to tell you this, but the government, in its great wisdom, decided we would no longer feed cows to cows. But we would take cows, and we would feed them to pigs, chickens, turkeys, and horses. And we would take pigs, chickens, turkeys, and horses and feed them to cows. And, of course, it would be too expensive to keep the cow blood out of the cattle ration, so we would turn a blind eye to that. And as we're talking today, on this radio today, what we're doing is we're feeding pigs, chickens, turkeys, horses, and cows and cow blood right back to cows. And we know that we can transfer diseases from one species to the other, even though we want to try and turn a blind eye to it. What we're doing is wrong. England, they no longer do that. They do not feed animals to animals. But the lobby here in this country, too strong, couldn't do what was good for the consumer, had to do what was good for the producer.
And you know, it's like we use the words like consumer. They couldn't do what was good to do for human beings and their fellow man. It's like we're consumers, we're human beings. And when I hear people like you speak, my first reaction is to get angry. It's like I didn't know my well-intended parents, and on and on and on. And you know, the science that you draw on is so really and truly spot on. And I make the comparison to breastfeeding mothers. I mean, when I breastfed my kids, the doctors told us, you know, if you're eating hot stuff, your kid's going to be up all night, and if you're going to have this, and everything went through the milk. So why do we, as human beings, not think that we can put all of this stuff in the food that the cows eat, shoot them with antibiotics, eat the cow, and we're good? We're good. It's okay. Like, how come we don't make that connection as consciously living human beings?
Well, why don't we understand what's happening right in front of us? You know, each and every one of us, we know people that are coming down with dementia.
Right.
And dementia is increasing. It's predicted that there will be 15 million Americans affected with Alzheimer's or Alzheimer-type symptoms by 2050.
I mean, that's terrifying.
That number is growing astronomically. Why? Well, you know, the symptoms of Alzheimer's and the symptoms of the human form of mad cow disease, bovine spongiform encephalopathy, are impossible to tell apart unless you take the brain of the affected individual out, put it under the microscope, and then you can tell whether it actually has Alzheimer's or mad cow disease of humans. You know, but why in the world are we seeing the number of diagnosed cases skyrocketing like this, and we turn a blind eye like, oh, well, there's somebody in government that's looking after us. I'll tell you, there's somebody in government that's looking after the profitability of some major corporations, not you or I.
And we call them Happy Meals. They're Happy Meals. It's like, that's like, you're going to be eating that now, and it's really not going to make you very happy. And it's, there's just basically no humor in this whatsoever. And what about, let's segue into the very pleasant topic of growth hormones and how ranchers routinely fed growth hormones to cattle and the government banned it. But how are they getting around that? How are the dairy ranchers getting around it? I don't even like talking about it.
Well, you know, I can remember back when I was operating my feedlot. We would end up buying chemicals to inject into our animals. And the government would come along and they'd say, gee, you know, this chemical that we were using, we find that it's affecting pregnant women. And we injected the cattle to abort their fetuses, and they were using the same chemical in women to keep them from aborting their fetuses. But the fact was, when the children were born, they were deformed. And there was no doubt about the connection, and so they basically said, we're going to require that you quit using this once the supply runs out.
Oh.
Well, every feedlot that I know of
went
out and bought enough supply that it lasted us for years.
Right.
That's the kind of oversight that we're seeing out of the government. And, you know, we right now, the listeners here, very few of us realize that the majority of antibiotics that are produced in the United States of America, the overwhelming majority are not used on humans. They're fed routinely to animals. And now we're showing up with diseases in hospitals that we don't have
right.
any antibiotics that will deal with them, strictly because we have fed them at low-level doses in the feedlots to the animals, and the bad guys, the bugs, got used to them. And now they're in the hospital, and they say, you can't do anything to us because we're used to all of those chemicals. There's some concern right now about Ebola showing up in the U.S.
Right.
You know, when are we going to wake up to the fact that maybe we should start trying to live with nature? Remember, nature does not negotiate.
I was just going to say
and
that.
What
it was
we've
a quote
been doing
you,
is wrong.
Yeah, yeah. At the night of the presentation, you said nature does not negotiate. So the bugs are just morphing into stronger bugs. And I this wasn't even in the notes, but I want to ask you this. What about the people who say to me, you know, I eat grass-fed, antibiotic-free, blah, 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 blah. I eat that kind of beef or that kind of chicken or that kind of pork. I used to say that. And now I've been to one too many Howard Lyman lectures and read one too many books, but I don't always know what to say. Is there a safe meat to eat? And why would you say don't do it anyway?
Well, let's stop and look at it. Is an animal that is fed as nature intended better to eat than that comes out of the feedlots with hormones and antibiotics? Of course they are.
Right.
But the question comes down, is animal protein, is eating an animal, even though it's raised as nature intended, is that good for your diet? The problem is that the major health concerns of humans today are heart disease, cancer, diabetes, obesity. You know what's at the base of each and every one of those?
Yeah,
animal protein.
Okay.
Is grass-fed beef better than the other? Yes. Should you eat it? Absolutely not. the right amount of animal protein for a human diet should be zero.
It's like irrefutable. And I just really, I'm going to keep listening to people like you so that I go from 80% to 100%. And you know, Howard, the biggest challenge for me and for my husband is not meat. It's dairy. And that's, in my opinion, it's worse. It's like, oh, God,
absolutely,
please don't take my cheese away. That's what happens.
Well, you know, if somebody came to me and they said, all right, wise guy, I'll let you take one thing out of my diet. The first thing that I would recommend for anybody would be to take dairy out of their diet. I was raised on the largest dairy farm in the state of Montana. I mean, there's nobody in my audiences that has eaten more cheese or ice cream or butter than I have. And when I tried to quit cheese, it was just like when I quit smoking. You know, you talk about withdrawal, but the fact of it is, the best thing that I could do for anybody's health would be to convince them not to eat dairy.
And that is really a tough one. So many of my friends, when we go out to dinner, it's like, well, I can give up my steak and I can give up pork chops. I mean, just looking at pork chops makes me sick. And then they'll come and they'll serve, you know, an antipasto with some cheese on it and lead us not into temptation. And there I am saying, I'm just going to have a little bit. Oh, my gosh. It's and there are people chirping in the background. John McDougall is one of them. He's not taking any of that whatsoever. So there's the growth hormones that, and you know, in your presentation, I keep going back to that because it's great to watch your movie. Your book is amazing. I hope that anybody who listens to this gets the book. But what the life of a dairy cow is like, just talk about that. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to know that the milk they drank came about as a result of this poor dairy cow.
Well, you know, if we take a dairy cow, the average life of a lactating cow should be about 20 years.
Okay.
Well, the United States of America, the USDA, says that the average life of a dairy cow in the United States today is about 3.5 years. Mm. And that's because we are loading that animal up with and requiring it to do far more than what that body was ever capable of doing. We just totally destroy that animal that should live to be 20 years old. In 3.5 years, it's completely worn out. And you know what happens next? They take that animal, they slaughter it, and the majority of it ends up into being a fast food hamburger. So anybody that's out there that's consuming dairy or is eating a burger is part of the abuse of those beautiful dairy cows. And all they wanted to do, all the cow wanted to do, was to eat some grass, produce some milk, take an 80-pound calf and grow it to about 400 pounds. And instead of that, we're taking that cow, that calf only gets to nurse one day.
That's so
and
disgusting.
Then we take the secretion of that cow and put it into the human population, and we have now the majority of Americans that are obese because they're just like that calf going from 80 pounds to 400. We're taking them at 60 pounds and turning them into 300.
And not a shred of evidence anywhere. On my journey as Mrs. Green, the big myth buster to me, not a shred of evidence anywhere that we need calcium from milk. It just doesn't happen. But that's what my mother loved me. She loved me. She goes, no, I didn't drink milk and I lost my teeth when I was really young. You needed for calcium and so you have strong teeth. So anyway, we're going to have to take another quick break. And when we come back, what I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, Howard, is your journey from what happened from health to animal rights to actually your belief that we are a species modifying the weather, that it's really not this, you know, far off concept of global warming, that we're melting the Greenlands, we're melting the planet through eating meat. Everybody, please stay here with me. Howard Lyman, the author of Mad Cowboy, The Plain Truth from the Cattle Rancher Who Won't Eat Meat. Please stay here with me. There's an exciting last segment, and you're going to want to hear every word.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine. It's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines. It gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
We rely on your generosity for our inventory. Homeowners, renters, contractors, and business owners keep the Habit Store stocked with building supplies, furniture, and appliances. You can drop off your donations or give us a call at 889-7200 to schedule a free pickup of items that are in good condition. Your donations means Habitat Tucson can build and renovate more homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store's hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are so blessed to be given the opportunity to be thinking about the very life that we get to have, the quality of life, our health. In some ways, I think our nation's sanity. I don't say that lightly. Our guest is Howard Lyman. He is the author of the book Mad Cowboy. He is a much sought after public speaker. He truly is a force to be reckoned with, and I hope everybody listening gets to hear him speak in person at some point. He's a fourth-generation Montana cattle rancher who investigated the use of chemicals in agriculture after developing a spinal tumor that nearly paralyzed him. Now a vegetarian, Howard and his very patient, very loving, very supportive wife have made it their life's work to blast through the propaganda of beef and dairy industries and the government that protects them to expose an animal-based diet as the primary cause of cancer, heart disease, and obesity in this country. And, you know, as I read this with each segment, I have no problem repeating it because it takes a while to sink in, everybody, of what exactly it is we're talking about here. We're up to big stuff. So, Howard, in the presentation at the Loft in Tucson, you made some pretty powerful statements about what we're doing to the planet as a result of eating meat and really and truly modifying the weather. So we're killing ourselves with heart disease, obesity, cancer, and we're really heating up the planet. And a lot of it has to do with eating meat. So will you go a little bit into your scientific observations on that?
Well, you know, it isn't very often when you can get 96% of scientists to agree on anything,
really?
Whether it was day or night. It'd be impossible almost. But today, 96% of scientists today are in concurrence that human actions are modifying the weather.
Right.
Never before in the history of planet Earth have we ever had a species that has modified the weather. We've had natural occurrences an asteroid hitting the Earth or a volcano has modified the weather, but never a species. But now we got 96% of the scientists that say, absolutely, humans today are modifying the weather. Well, so be it. What difference does it make? Well, the difference it makes is that weather ends up to be more extreme. When it's hot, it gets hotter. When it's cold, it gets colder. When it's windy, it gets windier. The hurricanes get worse. Tsunamis happen. The list goes on. And all of a sudden, you look at it and say, well, if this is happening, if humans are modifying the weather, why should I be concerned? The reason we should be concerned is because the temperature on planet Earth is going up. Now, the majority of fresh water is stored in the polar ice caps and the Greenland ice fields. And all of a sudden, we've seen the temperatures at the polar caps raise between 4 and 7 degrees. We're melting the ice caps. We're melting the Greenland ice field. Well, if we continue to do what we're doing, the prognostication of the scientists is that the temperature is going to continue to rise. We're going to melt the ice caps and the Greenland ice shield faster. If that happens, what concern is that? Well, if the Greenland ice shield was to melt, it would raise the ocean levels between 20 and 30 feet.
And it's happening.
The mean elevation of the state of Florida is 7 feet. Florida will be underwater.
Gone.
New Jersey will be underwater. New York City will be underwater. Bangladesh will no longer exist. The island nations that are in the Pacific, many of them will cease to exist. One out of every three people living on planet Earth today is going to live in an area that will be underwater. Having a good deal of difficulty with some people coming over our southern border. Can you imagine what it would be like if we had 100 million people next door to us that had to move? We're looking at the greatest economic dislocation the world has ever seen, and it's happening because of human action. So you look at it and say, well, what am I doing that's causing that to happen? We're being told that we've really got to do something about the amount of carbon dioxide that we're putting up in the air.
Right.
It is holding the heat in. When's the last time that somebody said to you, carbon dioxide is a problem, but methane is 26 times the problem of carbon dioxide? And you say, well, where's the methane coming from it? 51% of all of the methane going into our atmosphere today is coming from livestock that we are raising to eat. When you are eating an animal product, you are adding the methane that's holding in the heat, that is melting the ice shield, that's raising the level of the ocean. And we look at all of this and say, well, I live in Tucson. That's a long way from the ocean. I never did care for California anyway. And if they're underwater, so be it. Well, ask yourself the question. If we put that amount of fresh water into the ocean, we're going to change the concentration of the ocean. And when we do that, the ocean currents slow down. And when they slow down, then the weather changes. That is where the ice ages came from, is when we ended up slowing down the current of the ocean. That will affect every individual alive on the planet today. And so if you don't think that your eating meat is not contributing to the global warming, as it is called, which should be human modification of weather,
right,
you are sadly mistaken, and you can do something about that at the next meal.
And I think it's interesting in reflecting on your journey because, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, you started out because of your health and realizing what was happening to people, to yourself and to people you loved, and then you started being an advocate for the animals, but ultimately now you are truly an advocate for the planet, for Mother Earth, for...
Absolutely.
It's been like not a full circle, but such an evolution of revelation of what we're doing to ourselves. It's rather daunting at times.
Every time I look in the eyes of a child, I basically say to myself, his future, her future is in my hands. I've got to do something about it. Well, you know, I can look after my health and say I'm going to do something just so I'm healthier. Or I can look at it and say, well, if I don't eat an animal, and I'm not responsible for that animal dying. But the fact of it is, if I don't do everything that I can do, I'm going to be responsible for my grandson, who is 6 years old right now, that is going to be in an environment that may be totally unlivable for humans when he grows up. Should I not do everything that I can do? I know nature does not negotiate. I know that we are causing the problem. Should we not own up to that? Should we not be intelligent enough to say, well, I sure do like the taste of it, but I would rather have my grandchildren and my children have a place to live on the planet than to have some immediate reaction so I can have a heart disease, cancer, obesity, or diabetes. I think it's time that we all become part of the solution and not be part of the problem.
And, you know, you make such a good point of as the, the earth heats up, as the caps melt, as the oceans heat up, we're not going to be able to turn to fish either. That's what I say to people when they tell me I should narrow my scope and focus on something. I say I'm focusing on the planet, the health of the planet, because it's all so connected. Those oyster lovers that are proud of not eating meat, not going to be having any oysters for appetizers at the rate we're going. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have devastated the oceans. The idea that there is a solution that we're going to feed a growing population. And remember, as we're talking today, there will be 250,000 more people at dinner tonight than were here last night. That means that in 4 days, another 1 million people will show up that need to be fed. 1.75 million people a week, and that clock is going on and on and on. We cannot continue to do what we're doing. Nature does not negotiate. Nature is going to say, I am going to survive, but we're going to be just like the dinosaurs. We are not going to survive. They didn't know they were going extinct. We should.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, and you gave really some good examples of, you know, I loved your story about, I think it was about the reindeer, that was a very short period of time, 6,000 happy reindeer on an island. I don't remember, St. Matthew's Island, I think. And that's an example from history where there they were happy as can be, and 15 years later, not so many happy reindeer.
Well, you know, we took an island that was an absolute perfect place for reindeer, put 29 reindeer there. In 20 years, there were 6,000 fat, happy reindeer. No natural predators. They were fat and happy and thought they had reindeer heaven. In another 15 years, there was not one live reindeer because nature could not negotiate with the reindeer. They just kept producing, and they ate that entire island to nothing. And you know what ended up? Zero reindeer. We should look at something like that and say, let's make sure that doesn't happen to our species.
And we know, in fact, it already is. And someday we can have another interview about, so what we do with the really bad beef, instead of, you know, selling it to the fast food restaurants, is we put it in school lunches. I don't think it's funny, but I just did an interview with a guy who made a film, a documentary about Lunch Hour. And I think that leads to my next question. You have been doing this for over 25 years, correct?
Yep.
What direction are we going? Is it getting any better? What signs of hope do you see, other than that you're so excited that Mrs. Green's World is spreading the word and has become one of the biggest advocates for a plant-based diet, in theory and mostly in practice? What do you see from where you've been to now?
Oh, I'm amazed. I think that this train has left the station. We are going in the right direction. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that the majority of people in the United States of America will be eating a plant-based diet in my lifetime. There's no doubt in my mind about that. My question is, will that be soon enough so right. that we have not put nature into such a bind that we are not going to be able to survive? So it isn't about we're not going in the right direction. You know, the first time I got on an airplane and I used to fly, and I'd order a vegan meal and you'd never get it, and you'd ask the stewardess and she'd look at you like you had a communicable disease.
Right, like you're a bad person.
Yeah, today you can go to any truck stop, any weight person, and tell them you're a vegan and they know what that is. We've come a long, long way. But the question is, are we going to achieve the zero amount of methane going into the atmosphere in time to keep from melting the ice caps and,
right.
and the Greenland ice shield? Once that happens, we can all be a vegan. It won't make any difference. We'll be underwater. So I'm convinced we're going the right direction. The question is, are we going fast enough? I do not think so.
Yeah, I unfortunately do not think so. It's going to take quite a big shift. And when you factor in the oceans and, I don't know, the lack of consciousness that's so much out there. So we have about 3 minutes left, and I have to do a shout out for next week's coming up shows. But other than my shout out, to read your book, read the book Mad Cowboy. It's full of facts that will get in the way of your happy meat-eating life. It creates quite a bit of unrest if you want to handle the truth from someone that was a rancher. Lots of credibility there. What is the call to action that you would say to people that are listening? If they do one thing, stop eating meat?
No. The one thing I would say, go to my website, madcowboy.com.
Okay.
I have a newsletter there that is just absolutely filled with studies that are done. Read the studies yourself. Convince yourself that it's not this crazy cowboy that's there. The greatest scientists in the world have irrefutably shown that the proper amount of animal products that should be in your diet is zero. Educate yourself. Change in time, be able to say to your child and your grandchild, I'm doing everything I can to assure your future. Educate yourself, make a change.
And you call them factoids, and there's really, really great stuff there, everybody, because we do have to let facts get in the way. And I will tell you, when people say time flies when you're having fun, you know, it's a different kind of fun. It's a very sobering kind of fun. You're an amazing man. It was an honor and a pleasure to meet you, to have our paths cross. Thanks for taking the time. And I say that sincerely. It's not the perfunctory, oh, Howard, thank you so much for being on our show. I think you can tell that I'm a heart space person, and you really touched my heart. So thank you. That is a sincere thank you from Mrs. Green. And let me say that we have, as part of our Sustainable Community Series, Tuesday at 7, another great show, Chicanos Por La Causa, Magdalena Verdugo, who's the vice president of Chicanos Por La Causa, talking about what they're doing to create sustainable communities. November 1st, Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. Sheila Bowman, Seafood Watch Manager of Culinary and Strategic Initiatives. Good news there. Howard Lyman, you made it a great green day for me. Thanks for all you do. Thanks, everybody.